Hey, everybody, thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Preacher Boys podcast. I make this show for you, and I hope that you really enjoy it. I have a lot of people that ask me how they can support the show financially, and you can do that by heading over to patreon.com/preacherboys. You're going to get access to exclusive content, including early releases of episodes. I've got a couple episodes right now that have been released at least a month early over on Patreon. You've got access to things like unique merch, depending on what tier you join, and you get access to some behind the scenes content that I'm posting within the group. So head over to patreon.com/preacherboys and become a member over there today. Every single supporter helps make this show a little bit more possible, especially as I continue to add additional episodes and content every single week. Thank you so much for tuning in. Let's get back to the show.
Trigger warning. This podcast contains descriptions of various abusive situations. Listener discretion is advised.
Yeah, and I would say something about Golden State especially was it really depended on what your last name was there. So if you came, especially if you came from the North Valley Baptist School, and then you went to the college, you were treated definitely different.
You are listening to the Preacher Boys podcast, a podcast shedding light on decades of mental, physical, and sexual abuse within the independent fundamental Baptist movement. The testimonies shared on this podcast are told from the personal experience and perspective of the survivors. Not all legal outcomes are known or final. Any suspect is presumed innocent until proven guilty in the court of law. To find more information about the Preacher Boys podcast and upcoming documentary, visit PreacherBoysDoc.com or connect on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter with the handle @PreacherBoysDoc. Now, here is your host, Eric Skwarzynski.
I'm so excited to be sitting down with Christina and Carmen today. Can the two of you just introduce yourselves? We can start with Carmen and just let me know how you got introduced to the IFB movement and like around what period, how you got involved and what those initial experiences were like.
Yeah, my name's Carmen. Our family wasn't really born into the IFB. We just kind of were raised the regular Baptist. So I wasn't introduced into the IFB until maybe I was about 12.
Okay.
And we went, my mom visited an IFB church. She actually went for a friend of hers, and her initial reaction was she didn't actually like it. And so we kind of just left. And we kind of just continued doing our thing. And then I guess about 6 months later, she was like, hey, we're going to go back. And I was kind of like, okay with it.
Yeah.
Because at the current church that we were at, I guess she didn't really like the youth group. Or she didn't like it at all, I should say. So my sister and I were not actually involved in the youth group. Mm-hmm. And so we were actually just going to the main services with my parents. So honestly, it was kind of boring. And so I was actually really excited for the fact that I would be able to actually be involved in a youth group. And so it was actually a pretty positive experience for me. But yeah, I would say we got introduced when I was 12. She's a little older than me. So
okay.
13, 14, something.
But yeah.
Okay. So it's about like a 3-year gap between the two of you?
About a year and a half.
Oh, a year and a half. Okay. Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Okay. What about you? Was your experience the same, like just kind of the same, like might be a cool change of pace at first or?
Yeah, no, definitely agree with the youth group, not being able to go to the youth group at our old church. My mom, she is a very, very strict lady. So she has very interesting rules, I guess. So we always grew up pretty conservative. And so at the church, the youth group, she just felt like it wasn't like good enough, I guess. So she was just like, no, I don't really want you guys there. So yeah, we were in the main service and it was boring. So then, when we went to this new church and my mom was like, yeah, no, you guys can go to the youth group here. We were like, sweet. Awesome. So that was our first initial, I would say was like positive. Cause we were like, yay, like these people are kind of cool. And they talk to us and stuff like that. So
right. And what was you guys went to church beforehand? Was it just like a non-denominational church before that,
no,
or
it was a Baptist? Yeah, but it was pretty laid back.
It was a GARBC church. I just remember that much.
Yeah, pretty chill. Like, the dress standards weren't anything crazy. Yeah.
Right.
We definitely didn't do soul winning.
Yeah, that wasn't really a thing. He didn't preach from the King James.
Right.
So it was pretty casual. We did have the name Baptist in it.
Yeah, it was Baptist. I mean, we did go Sunday morning, Sunday night, and also
we
Wednesday.
Were involved.
But it didn't have, it wasn't to the extent.
Yeah.
So maybe just regular Baptist.
Right. Yeah.
I don't know.
So when you both ended up going to this new church, like, was it, I know it was positive, like the idea of going, but was it something where you spent quite a bit of time there before you ever started feeling like second thoughts about it, or started feeling like, oh, this is kind of different? Or was it a big culture shock going from a laid back church to a more IFB church?
Yeah, it was. So I'll speak, and then if you want a second. So for me, I remember thinking like that it was a huge shock. However, my mom was still kind of okay with how me and my sister, and we also have a brother that went there too, how we all dressed. And so we were kind of like okay with it, like going and knowing that we had our own like way of living when we were like at our house. However, it was not quick and not long until my mom like completely just embraced like the whole IFB culture, and hence like,
she pretty much.
Yeah. So that's when your home life starts kind of changing, is like wear the skirts outside of church kind of vibe.
Yes. So. Yeah. And so at first it was kind of cool, 'cause we were like, oh wow, we're these like teenagers that don't actually do that. 'Cause there were some. Yeah. I feel. And then like, we thought, you know, we were like kind of part of that. But, I would say the biggest thing that I remember, where I saw like a red flag pop up was when, so my older sister, there's four of us. So my older sister was attending Bob Jones University at the time.
Okay.
And for whatever reason, I still don't actually feel like I know why, but our youth pastor, and that's one of the main reasons like we came on here, was to touch on our youth pastor at the time, but he was very against that college. To the point where he would start treating me and my sister and our brother differently because of the school that our sister went to.
Right.
For college.
Probably some other reasons there, but
yeah.
Sure. So did you feel a pressure pretty early on? I know you guys were like 12, 15. I mean, did you feel a pressure toward going to a specific Bible college pretty early on? Okay.
Yes. Yep. Yes. I would say like the first Sunday that we even went to the church, and I don't mind saying the name of the church, we went to New Hope Baptist Church, and I believe it's still in existence, and it's in Santa Rosa or Sonoma area. But that's where we went. And I would say like just maybe very early on, the pastor's wife was, I didn't even know what she was talking about, but she was like all for us going to the youth conference at Golden State. And she was like, you need to sign up. And I'm like, what? I don't even know like what's happening right now. So, right. And it was very early on where, that the Bible college was, pushed, and we both didn't have any, I thought Bible college meant like Bob Jones University, 'cause that's where our sister went. Right. I didn't realize that there was this whole other realm.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, what was kind of the, was it something you were on board with pretty early on, like with the idea of going? Were you, I guess I had asked if it was shocking, but like, did you at some point in the high school experience kind of go like, oh, I click into this, like this is like, I'm on the same page with everything they're saying. I need to start planning for Bible college. Or was it always this kind of weird, like, what are you doing? Why are you telling me which way to go, which direction to take my life?
I honestly can say that I went to Golden State, like I wasn't forced. I was very happy to go there. I am the youngest, so maybe that is why I did spend a lot more time in the church. So maybe that contributed, but despite the weird youth pastor experience, I wasn't upset. I wasn't bitter or anything. I was actually really excited to go because they painted this like fairy tale, like you're going to go to this college, you know, this, and you're going to just find someone your freshman year, and you're going to get married your senior year. And then all of a sudden you're going to go into the ministry and life is grand. And I was like, oh, that sounds pretty cool. Like, I always wanted to, like, I wanted to do what God wanted me to do. You know, I was really very sincere. So I did actually was rather excited to go. It wasn't until college that things kind of was like, I was like, this is a little bit not what I anticipated. So,
right. Yeah. Just real quick, circling back to your youth pastor, you guys keep mentioning like the weird relationship there. Was it solely over the college thing? Like there was tension because you had your brother going to this college and like,
it was my sister
or your sister.
So it was me, my brother and Carmen who were all at the youth group kind of in the same time.
Right.
Yeah. I don't think it was solely that. No, I think this is my take and I couldn't be completely wrong on this. I think, when we first got to the church, we definitely had some like hesitation to kind of believe everything that, you know, they were teaching because I had been told for, I don't know, 12, 13 years that this is the way, this is the Christian life, this is the way we do things. And then all of a sudden you're telling me that everything that was taught is wrong. And so I was very hesitant. I'm like, I would like to know why I can't go to the movies, or I would like to know why. And I think he kind of just thought that was rebellious. Maybe it was
definitely.
So I think he just, he was just like, we were just deemed rebellious in those. He was just, we wouldn't be allowed to like go to certain activities, or he would not let us participate in the youth group activities, or he wouldn't let people, certain families sit by us, or he wouldn't let his children associate with us, certain things like that. So it was just, he just never liked us.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. But it was to the point where it got like super obvious, where I remember I was like saying something to my mom on several accounts of like saying like something is not okay here. Like the things that are happening in the youth group, howbeit nothing like so severe, but it was just like kind of like over time, just like that little nagginess, just like over time, where it was like affecting my self-esteem, just because it was almost like cruel, but in like masked in a way where it was like sarcasm or humor, so that other people wouldn't be like, oh wow, like
that's not okay.
Yeah. So I remember there was this one event where the youth pastor, and his name is Chris Jones. He is still in the IFB movement and he is at, Hopewell.
Right, I was going to say that name sounds very familiar, but yeah. Okay.
Yes. So, so we were trying to go to a youth conference. It was a youth conference at Golden State Baptist College. And so, he was actively trying to like get us not to go. Whereas he was making all these different rules, and like I felt like new rules were coming up, and he would say like, if you miss one soul winning out of like 6 months or something, like you can't go to
you have like a mark,
mark or something. It was like something kind of like
a service during the week.
Yeah,
we lived an hour away, so
yeah,
like that. Sometimes you just didn't make it. Like you'd be like another mark, but if you get to 3 marks, you can't go to the youth conference. And it was like only stuff that like would affect.
Right.
Which I think we actually did do.
So he did. We did do everything.
Yeah, we did do everything. But at the very end, I don't remember if you remember this, but at the youth, we were like all in the youth group. And then Chris Jones was basically like pointing at people who were going to go to youth conference. And like just right there in public. And like me and Carmen weren't picked, and maybe one other girl. And I was like, why are we not going? Because we followed all of these like extensive rules that were laid out. And so we went and told our mom after service and said, hey, like Chris Jones says that, or Brother Jones says we can't go to the youth conference. And she was like, well, why? And I'm like, I have no idea. And so they had their own meeting with my youth pastor and then my mom. Mm-hmm. And apparently from what Brother Jones said was that we just didn't have like a good enough attitude to be able to go. And so he just said that we wouldn't be able to go with them.
Right.
To the youth group, like as part of their church.
Yeah, I think that was kind of towards the end. I think at that point, my mom was kind of like, and She actually took us, my mom personally.
Yeah.
Took us and she registered us under the same church name, but she was the Spanish.
Oh, gotcha.
So that, you know, we would be allowed to go. And because it was just me, Christina, and another girl who happened to also be Hispanic. So I don't even know if we told the Joneses or whoever, we just went because like my mom was kind of like, that's not cool. So she personally took us. And then I guess when he saw us there, he was like, he told the other youth that they weren't allowed to like sit with us or talk to us or anything, like to associate with us. But yeah, he would actively just kind of get us involved in too many activities. I don't know if he thought we would just be a bad example to the other teenagers or what. Right. There was another activity, the corn maze.
I do remember
that there was a corn maze activity, like a teen activity. And then we couldn't make it. It's not like we didn't want to go. We had something on that day. Make it to his activity. But we really wanted to go. So we kind of reached out to a couple of our friends and were like, hey, do you want to go the week before? And they were like, yeah, let's do it, you know?
They also happen to be in the youth group.
Yeah, they happen to be. And yeah, I was like, yeah, like I want to go. I just can't happen to go this week or whatever. Something worked out. So I think we went the week before. And it was great. We had a good time and then we left. So it turns out the next week they wanted to go with the
actual corn maze.
Yeah.
Group, like activity.
Right.
Yeah. And so they got there and like Brother Jones wouldn't let them in. And he's like, you guys wanted to go behind my back and do something on your own and rebellious so you guys can't come to the corn maze. Well, they were like, well, we were just hanging out with friends. We weren't trying to like be like malicious or anything. I think at the end he did let them go though, but it was just kind of like,
it was this weird like pressure pretty much.
Yeah. To like, not, I don't know, but yeah. I mean, despite all that, like I still was really looking forward to Bible college and stuff, but
yeah. So I mean, obviously going to this new church was a shock, but I mean, Golden State has to be shock of shocks because that's about as, I guess you could use the word extreme. I guess it's as extreme as you could get outside of maybe Hiles. I mean, they're definitely one of the most conservative colleges. So what was that like? I mean, so which one of you arrived first at the college?
I went first. And my mom at this point was fully like immersed in the IFB movement. So she basically said I could go either to Hiles Anderson or to Golden State. West Coast wasn't even on the table. Like that wasn't even a choice. And I remember visiting it and actually kind of liking it, and I would have been okay going there, but my mom was like, no, West Coast is like not good enough or something.
They were too contemporary or too.
Their music had a beat. But I think what it was too was, I feel like some IFB churches, they favor like one particular college. Like that's the one that like they like to send their teens to. And so Golden State just happened to be the one for New Hope Baptist Church. We went there every teen, you know, all the youth conferences, we went there every youth conference since we joined, even with that one awkward one that was later on, but we went to every single one. So it was kind of just, that was just the college to go to.
Right.
Yeah, was Golden State. And so my mom told me I had those two options, and I was not for Hiles Anderson. I visited it and I was so like not okay with it. So I just chose Golden State because I felt like I didn't really have a choice in the matter. So I wouldn't say I wanted to go there. It wasn't something that I would have chosen, I think, on my own. I think when it came time to like being a senior, I remember just like telling people at church, like, oh yes, I prayed and, you know, I think this is the place for me, just because I felt like that was something that I should say, but it really wasn't like I had pored over it and thought. It was just like, that was the only choice that I had. Right. It wasn't like my own personal decision or God speaking to me and telling me to go to Golden State.
Sure. Sure. So what was kind of like that life, like switching to kind of college life, and what was the kind of culture shock, I guess, there? Like, what was the vibe on campus?
So
again, it might be different from you because you went there a couple years after me. But for me, I think what struck out so big to me when I first got there was how differently the girls were treated at college versus the guys that were treated at college. I almost felt like there was like a sexism to it where we were just almost taught to just do anything that a guy says almost like, right. You know, if they ask you out on a date, go for it. Like, don't say no. And it was very heavily pushed, like, you know, you need to be dating by your this year, because if you're not, like, you're going to be a spinster because you're a senior and you're not dating anybody. And so that was something that was pushed in for me, especially. I'm more of an athletic person, and I still am. So I loved like sports and all of that. And both of us actually, we love watching sports. It's just kind of like our thing.
Yeah.
And I remember feeling a lot of shame because of that. They're like, because I would mention like, wow, there's not really a lot of sports here for girls. Like it was just like volleyball and right. We don't play volleyball. And so I remember saying like, do you think there can be a soccer or whatever? And feeling like so much like, wow, you want to play soccer? And I'm just like, what? Or just like the shame right. that you'd feel because you expressed the fact that you maybe wanted to do something that was like boyish, but in all reality, it was just how we were. Like, we weren't trying to like,
we weren't trying to make a statement or something. You were just trying yeah. to be yourself.
Exactly. And I remember even to the fact where going to the gym was like looked down on if you were like a girl. And we grew up going to the gym. So we were just kind of like, for one, there was not really a gym for the girls to go to, but yeah, like there was, I think my senior year, there was finally like a treadmill that was put into a dorm room.
Right.
And like a big bouncy ball, and that was it. And so it just, I remember, and I felt this in high school, and I also felt it in college where it was like, it was just almost like you were really looked down on if you had those thoughts of like, wanting to, you know, go to the gym and get healthy. Or if you wanted to, you know, watch something like a sports game, you know, that was available. They were like, wow, that's only for the guys. And we're like, well, I don't know. So that was something that stuck out to me. It was just like that extreme difference of you're a lady, you're a man. So you cannot do this. If you're a man, if you're a girl, you cannot do this. Right. And it was just very jarring.
Gotcha. Yeah. And then what about you, Carmen? I know you came a few years after, but was it kind of the same experience?
So like I said, mine was more of a positive because I was like, well, at this time, my brother and sister are both at the school. And so I'm like, cool, like, this should be fun. I should mention that.
Yeah. I don't mind.
Was it my senior year, which was her freshman or sophomore, one of those, she got expelled. I don't know if I should say this about Francisco. I don't know. Whatever. Yeah. Also, my brother had gotten expelled, but not from Golden State. It was from Hiles, and so he was at Golden State. So
you guys collectively just decided to hit every IFB college, like Bob Jones, Hiles, West Coast, Golden State. You just got to send one off to Pensacola. You've collected them all, you know?
Right. So when I got there, I had a very positive attitude, but I didn't realize, and I did realize this for myself later on, but I didn't realize that when you get expelled from college, you get treated a lot differently.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter what you even got expelled for. It could be something super small, but oh my gosh, the fact that you had to leave the school, like, my sister said this before I even got there, you don't know your true friends from Bible college until you get expelled, because they are the only ones that will stick by you once you get expelled. And right. So my freshman year, she had already been expelled. And I remember just walking, I literally just got there, and we had just unpacked our stuff, and we were in the lunch line. And I don't even know who said it, but didn't somebody behind me or somebody behind us was like, I think she's a Castro. She'll probably be expelled too. And that was literally the first experience I had. And I was like, okay, maybe this isn't like what I thought this place was. So that was, and then, but other than that, it was pretty positive. My first year, things kind of got different after I also got expelled. And then I came back, and that's when I completely saw everything in like a different light. And that's when I saw like the double-sided and how everything was like super could be, you know, hypocritical. And that was my eye-opening experience. And that's when I was like,
I think the fact that we came back after we got kicked out was one of the big reasons why we felt so much like shame from people and like hate.
What do you mean came back as students?
Yeah, we both came back after we got expelled. And so we were treated significantly different. I would even say that some of my teachers treated me different in like my classes because of the fact that we got kicked out. And then
and you don't have to share if you don't want to, but was it a serious reason for which you got kicked out? Was it just an accumulation of demerits for small stuff? Like,
no, there was a event. For me, I went to the movies, and so that was why I got kicked out.
My first time getting kicked out was she was with me.
Yeah.
So it was her second time getting kicked out. Mm-hmm. The reason they kicked me out is because I knew people were drinking and I didn't tell on them.
Gotcha.
So,
but you weren't actually doing that.
I wasn't drinking at the time, but I didn't snitch.
At the time, small print. When you get to West Coast, it's, no, I'm just kidding. So coming back, you're seeing kind of this duplicity and I just, for me, this is something like that's super weird for me. Cause like I didn't go to Bible college. I ended up like last minute diverting my course, but I am always curious because there seems to be a lot of unspoken stuff, like a lot of like, you just pick up on that vibe and things like that. But did you feel like maybe like the differences between like the men and the women, how they were treated, or like the way that certain people or groups were looked down on? Was that something that came from like the pulpit down and the classroom down, or was it purely just like after class, like a professor would say something or a fellow student would say something? Like, was it more a vibe or more something that was like heard and said?
I think it was something that was heard and said. Talked about like from the pulpit, I would say, not necessarily like, wow, mistreat people, but it was more of like, you definitely had this, you had this appearance that you had to uphold while you were there. And you know, as Carmen had mentioned, coming in and knowing that she was related to someone that had gotten kicked out, was already like a mark on her. So
you kind of bear their sin on you kind of thing.
Yeah. So it was like almost like predetermined that, wow, like, especially, and I'm saying this more of like guys wanting to date girls. There was definitely that talk about like, wow, you know, this person got kicked out. So
you hence, don't want to date this person.
Yeah. Yeah.
You wouldn't want to date someone who got expelled. Although like everybody was basically, like, it's just like a lot of people were doing it. We just got unfortunate enough to be caught, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, yeah. Yeah. And I would say it's something about Golden State, especially was it really depended on what your last name was there. So if you came from the North Valley Baptist school and then you went to the college, you were treated definitely different. Exactly. Or even if you did something that would warrant getting kicked out, they would just kind of let it slide or just give you a ton of demerits. Whereas, you know, they would be just
like searching to find another reason. No,
I just had a conversation the other day of a situation just like that, where it was like, because of the nature, I won't say what it is right now, but it was something where it was very clearly like, it was very clear that they would have kicked out anybody else, but because it was a staff kid, it didn't go. And it's something I really wish I could just share, but because it's involves that, like, I don't want to shame like a, you know, a student for something, but it's just like, it's one of those things where it's like the one thing that does seem to be very consistent at North Valley and Golden State is that favoritism of names. And like, there's people who've been there. Well, I mean, Alvin Martinez, like, I mean, that's a situation where if a college student said, oh yeah, I got married. And then I like came here, I got married to someone else. Like, No, yeah. You're not going to get anywhere. But because he can sing and because he's been there and Treiber likes, you know, like there's a lot of stuff there that just gets allowed to happen. So after getting kicked out, one of you the second time, one of you the first, where do you end up? I know, Carmen, you end up at West Coast. Christina, like what was kind of your journey after that? Was it kind of like, I'm done with this? Or was it, I'm going to find something else to do? Like, what was kind of the vibe from there?
Well, so going back, I was a junior. And so I just felt like I had to finish because I'd already committed like 3 years of my life here. And so yeah. I felt like if I left and started somewhere else, it would just be longer. So I was very determined to just be done. And it was those last 2 years, I would say, were really eye-opening for me because I was alone kind of a lot just because people just, it wasn't even that big of a college. And you kind of like, you made your friends in the beginning of your freshman year and they kind of just were your friends all the rest of the time. And so
how many people were there during that time?
300?
Yeah, maybe yeah. 300.
Maybe.
Not a whole lot though. just because, yeah, but because of just me being by myself. I didn't really have like any close friends there, to be honest, my last 2 years. Mm-hmm. I just did a lot of thinking and I started thinking about, like all these rules that we follow and why are we even following them? And I just went down a whole list in my head about like these things that we're told to do, but I can't find any verses in the Bible that even specifically are talking about that.
Right.
And so that was something that I started realizing. So I would say my senior year of Golden State, I was so not even off. I was not IFB like at all, but I was just going just so that I could finish because I just had the year left. And that's kind of what I did. But I was so over it by my junior and senior year because I'd been there so long and I had seen so much that just with the staff and how they were sometimes go out of their way to do the whole favoritism thing that I just was almost a hermit really because I didn't even want to be around people at that point. Like it was kind of sad. I just remember being like, I can't wait to be done so I can just get out of here. And like, I'm never like looking back like at all ever again.
Right. Right.
Hey, everybody, we're going to get back to the show in just a minute. But before our brief intermission, I'd like to introduce a thought-provoking new podcast called Psychotherapy. That's two words if you're going to go search for it right now. This show sheds light on the very real issue of abusive therapists and pastoral counselors. In every helping profession, including therapy, there's a vulnerability to exploitation. And Psychotherapy delves deep into the red flags, risks, and real-life stories of those affected by unethical practices. Tune in to Psychotherapy with Leah Denton on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your shows.
I'm Leah Denton, and this is Psychotherapy, a show dedicated to providing survivors of therapy harm a platform to share their stories and to offer language for those of us trying to make sense of our own experiences with the psycho in the therapist chair.
And Carmen, you didn't make such a clean exit. You ended up going toward, you ended up going to West Coast. What went into that decision? Were you just still like, maybe it was just here? Like it was kind of an isolated thing. So I'll try going somewhere else, or what was kind of the.
So after I got expelled the first time for
the association.
Association. I actually went back to Golden State. Because my mom was like, you need to go back. And so part of the whole IFB culture or cult, whatever, is like your appearance and like looking good. And I'm not sure if that's why my mom wanted us to keep going back. Cause I don't know, like my mom was very big on like making sure she looks good in front of the church, things like that. So she was like, you have to go back. You have to go back. And I was like, well, I was like, I don't think I should at this point. That's when I first considered West Coast. And I spoke to my advisor about it. at Golden State. And she was like, well, I don't think you should go to West Coast. So you should stay at Golden State. And so I was like, okay, I guess I'm going to stay at Golden State. So I actually went, I stayed at Golden State. And then
until I graduated, you were there, I want to say, right?
No, was that the... I ended up getting expelled again for the second time, but that was with you?
Oh, okay.
No. No, I only got expelled with you once. So I ended up getting expelled again. Was that for the pants?
I don't remember. Yeah.
Okay. It was, so we ended up getting, we didn't really get expelled. We just got in big trouble. We weren't allowed to stay in the dorms for the summer.
No. And I had already graduated.
That was her graduate. Yeah. So right when she graduated, we were working close by the college. We were kind of just like using the college to stay in the summer. But we got in trouble for wearing shorts on the family vacation. So we were kicked out again.
I was already graduated. So I don't even know if that was kicked out or they were just like, just leave at this point. Like, I think they were sick of us. They're like, just get out of here.
So then my mom was like, no, you have to go back. And I was like, okay, I guess I'll go back because this is what God wants me to do. I ended up going back and almost graduating. I ended up getting in trouble a third time. And then after that, I was like, I really don't think at that point, I feel like they're looking for reasons to like make me leave. Yeah. I was about a week away from graduating at that point.
Oh, wow.
And yeah. So I had one more final to take. I was going to graduate. And then I ended up getting in trouble for something I did like 3 months prior. So it was just, at this point I was like, they don't even want me here.
No.
They clearly have, I was like, so that's when I went to West Coast. And that obviously was not, my parents were very upset at that fact that I didn't go back to Golden State for the fourth time. But I felt that that's what God wanted me to do. Just, I needed to just start somewhere fresh. So I ended up going to West Coast for a year to finish.
Right. Wow. So going from a week left to a year left is pretty brutal. Did West Coast feel like a breath of fresh air after Golden State? Because I have to... Just knowing the two, I have to believe it felt like a relief in, I mean, probably not if you went from like a pretty chill environment to West Coast, but going from a pretty crazy environment to a less crazy environment was pretty great.
Yeah. And like for once, like the teachers didn't know me, you know, or they didn't know like my siblings, you know, or they didn't have like preconceived notions of me. So it felt really nice to just be able to like be myself and not have to worry about like always looking over my shoulder. Golden State was weird in the sense that I always felt like somebody was just there waiting for me to like slip up and then like, you know, I had a dorm suit that was really weird at Golden State. And she would check all the rooms at night and then she would come back just to my room to see what I was doing.
Right.
And it was just little things like that. I was like, why aren't you treating all the other, like, is it because, you know, so it was very, I was very happy to be at West Coast.
Are a lot of the Golden State College kids North Valley, like, lifers? Is it a good mix of people that come? I mean, I know it's a smaller pool of people than West Coast, and not by much, but it's definitely, I was wondering about that.
There's a decent of North Valley,
And there's also aside from North Valley, there's people who come who are related to so-and-so who was related to so-and-so. And they come in and they're just like treated like
because the teacher knows their dad's brothers.
Then you go as far as, you know, people who are in that tour group. So if you're related to someone that was on the tour group, then you're also treated like magnificent the second you walk on campus. So it was just that's kind of how it was the whole 4 years that that I was there. But I did want to mention, I'm actually just remembering because you said dorm suit, but I had I don't know if she was a dorm suit or a dorm mom, but my freshman and sophomore year, it could have just been my freshman year, I'm not remembering exactly, there was a lady who was the dorm mom, I guess. So she lived there. She wasn't a student, but she lived in the dorms. And she was awful. She was awful to me. And I know her name too. I don't know. I haven't seen her pop up at all on Preacher Boys. I'm actually curious about it, but her name was Jo Trell. So she married. She got engaged. So I don't know. Or something, right? I don't remember her current last name, but that was her name when I knew her. It was Jo Terrell. And she really would go out of her way to like make things like terrible. To the point where on my floor, there was these girls that just were mistreating me like almost all year. Hmm. And in the middle of the year, I'm going grocery shopping or something. And she calls me and I'm like, oh, hello. And then, she was like, I just want you to know that I'm moving your current dorm where you're at. You're going to be moving to a different dorm, like randomly in the middle of the year. And I'm like, what? Why? And she was like, oh, it's just your room is too big or something, or you have too many people in your room. And so she actually moved me into that same room where those girls were, just to like, I don't know, for fun, I guess. And so I remember that detail so much. And I was just, and she wasn't at the college at the time. So I just felt so alone. And I felt so like, why do you have to make this extra step to just make someone feel even worse for like no reason at all? Right. So, but yeah, she was not a great person. And honestly, I don't know anything about her right now. So she could be totally reformed and not even in the IFB movement. But I remember that first year, just the things that she would do. And then there's the dorm mom, and then there's like dorm soups, I think. So there's like the ones that do go to school, but they're like kind of in charge.
Yeah.
The floor monitor. That's what it is. The floor monitor. So she would put those like anyone that was like, she had like her inner circle of these girls that were like terrible to other people, but they were allowed to just be like untouched. And she would put them in charge as like the floor monitor. And sure. So of course my demerits were racking up because they were the ones that were in charge of all of that. Or I remember there was this thing where you could work off demerits. So if you had too many demerits, you could like work them off. And I want to say that it's like, you can work off 10 demerits per hour. It was something like that. So I went to Jo Terrell cause I'm like, hey, I have these demerits that I've racked up so many of them, because again, the floor monitor was not also nice. And she was like, okay. So she had me do this work. I think I worked for like 3 hours or something crazy, like doing some insane work about like cleaning the bathrooms, which from when I chatted with other girls, they were like, no, we just had to like, you know, do something super minor. Like here I am like unplugging the bathroom toilets and like for to work off my demerits. And it was like, and then at the end of it, she only took off 5 demerits, even though I worked like this insane amount. And so I remember thinking like, I'm over this. But yeah, so it wasn't even as much as like, the staff could also work with like people that were your peers to like kind of make things miserable for you.
So what was the vibe like over in Lancaster, like at West Coast? Like, would you say it was overall fairly positive throughout, or was it something where like, was there anything like, did it have its own weird kind of quirks and things like that?
Not that I noticed. I was only there for a year, and I made sure that I was either working or in my room doing homework, because I was not at this point going to take any chances with anything.
Making the wrong step.
I kind of turned myself into a hermit as well, just because at this point, like I was over everything as well. I was ready to be done. So I didn't notice anything at West Coast, you know, too like major. It was, I think they did. Yeah. Nothing. I would say no, but again, I didn't make a lot of contacts there. So
right.
I'm sure if I would have stayed there for the 4 years, I would have, you know.
Sure. Yeah. So like post-graduation, like the two of you now outside, did either of you go into ministry at all after? Or?
I didn't. I studied to be a teacher there. And so it really was actually amazing how it all worked out. I worked at a school while I was in college. And so shortly after I graduated, I went to a kind of like a sister school of the one that I was working at. Just because I don't know if this is how it was at West Coast, but at Golden State, it would be like so many people would work at the same job because it was advertised. I think in the beginning of the school year, they would name out these different jobs where, you know, you could apply and more than likely get hired. And so when I graduated, the school that I was working at was filled with people from Golden State that were currently still going there. And I didn't want any part of any of it. So I moved, like I just went to a different school that was not affiliated with Golden State whatsoever at that point, at least. I think it is now, but at the point it wasn't. And from there, I was actually able to, they asked me to be a teacher there. And so I started working as a teacher almost pretty soon after graduating. And it was a private school. It wasn't Christian affiliated, but it was just a private school. And I worked there and I've been teaching ever since, not at that same school, but right. Definitely I'm involved in church. Well, with COVID, things have been a little bit different. But as far as like the ministry, I have not.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Same.
I got my music degree, and so I became a music teacher. But as far as IFB, I've completely left.
Right. So now kind of like looking back at me, you had this kind of weird religious pocket of time, but kind of sitting here with retrospect, I mean, obviously, like, again, religion and faith, I guess, can be separated a little bit, but would you say that both of you, I mean, are both of you still Christians? Do you feel like it's something where it's like kind of put you off of like just that world in general? I know you said you're still like attending, COVID kind of messed that up, but I mean, is it something where you feel like it made you like second guess that stuff, or is it something where it was like you kind of just separated those two things in your mind? Like that was a weird pocket of Christianity, but you know, we still have the faith side.
Yeah, I would say I go to a non-denominational church now. So, and I'm, I should have said this at the beginning, but I didn't. But I'm like, I'm not bitter. I'm not upset. I'm a really firm believer in that all things happen for a reason. And there is a reason. I mean, I met my husband somehow through all of this. So there is some good that comes out of this, you know? And I just kind of, I feel like, you know, we can grow from it. We can learn from it. Kind of where I'm at now. I have a whole different like perspective of Christianity. And I think, I just kind of think about that as just like, yeah, at one point I went to a cult and I was in a cult and now I'm out. And
yeah.
Right. Where I'm at now.
So for me, I actually, so I guess we also should have mentioned this too, but my family moved away from that New Hope Baptist Church in, Sonoma, and they started attending what I believe is an IFB church, but correct me if I'm wrong. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's called Heritage Baptist Church and it's in San Leandro. They were, I want to say IFB is to the fact where they did do the King James Version only, but they also were very lax with their dress. Okay. So it was like going there was like, oh, this is actually kind of cool because they're more, and this church happened to be very for West Coast. So it was just interesting how that all worked out. But my mom made that transition to that church.
Yeah. Alan Fong. Yeah. He's I think he used to work at West Coast till recently, or he speaks there a lot.
He really does like West Coast. And I believe that's an IFB church, but it just, for whatever reason, it was like not as like in your face, maybe as, right. As New Hope Baptist was. It was a bigger church too. So after graduation, so my mom made that change over to that church when I was like probably like a junior at Golden State. So graduating, that's where she went. And I attended that church with her and my family for
I would say probably another 2 years or so. And then I actually, interestingly enough, the person I was dating, about around that time period, he actually attended Hopewell. And so I was actually going to those services, a lot. And, most Sundays actually I was there. And, the person I was dating actually at the time, he was working in the youth ministry part of that on Fridays. Right. And, I know this is all common knowledge now about Brother Marzak, but way back then, like those years ago, he came up to me and he was saying how some girls in the youth group were coming up to him and saying how Brother Marzak was being inappropriate or whatever. And I said, wow, you need to go tell Pastor Ray like right now. And he's like, yeah, I think I will. So I set up this meeting to talk to Pastor Ray. And nothing happened. They were just kind of like, I kept seeing him in church when I would go there. And I thought that was a little odd. And that point, and I get Jack Scop had already been arrested at this point too. So this was just another, because I was so like involved in it kind of, because I was like at the church at the time, I was so like almost angry that like nothing at all happened whatsoever. Right. And so that's when I started like not really going to that church anymore. The whole IFB, I actually would say I wasn't going to any church. And that was kind of like how I felt like I was okay. I'm like not going to any church, but, just purely because of the things that I had been seeing throughout, I guess that was just kind of like the cake, like the cherry on top kind of, I was like, wow, that's a big deal and nobody's doing anything about it. But I will say, not going to church for probably about 6 months or so, maybe a little bit more. I'm mentioning this story because it was so like pressing on me. So I'm in the hospital, not for myself, but just someone in my family was just needing to get help at the time. So I'm in the hospital with my mom and one of my family members. And so we're just kind of in the waiting room. And again, I hadn't been really talking with my mom just because, this is like a whole rabbit trail, but because of not going to the IFB church, I was basically shunned. But we were there at the time. And so she's sitting there, I'm sitting there. We're all just like, we're just in the waiting room, just like waiting. And this lady walks in and she looks at me and she looks at my mom and she kind of like walks away. And then she comes back and looks at me and she's like, oh, are you related to, you know, so-and-so, which is, you know, my relative. And I'm like, yeah, I am. How did you know that? And she was like, oh, I just, you know, something, I heard that she was here and I came to just, you know, offer prayer or whatnot. And my mom instantly got up because she was like, oh, who is this person? And she introduced herself again. She's like, I'm, you know, the pastor, or I don't want to say her name because I actually haven't chatted with any of them about this, but she was a pastor's wife. And my mom instantly saw she was wearing pants and it was just like, and just kind of like went and sat down. And so, but I continued to have conversation with her. I'm like, how do you know, my relative and yada, yada. And she's like, well, she's actually been coming to our church for like the past, you know, 6 months or so. And, you know, we knew something was going on. We just wanted to come by and, you know, offer like anything that you might need. And again, I hadn't been in the church for so long, but I remember this because it was like, she treated me so nicely. Like she went out and bought lunch and then brought it back. And to the point where the whole day that really like shone on me that I actually ended up visiting that church because of just that, like that way that she was acting. It was so like super kind and it was no judgment at all. Like no questions asked. She was just like, let me know I can help. And I actually ended up going to that church. That's called Hillcrest Baptist Church and they're a Southern Baptist church. And that's where I like fell in love with it. And so it just kind of, it was a good, I think it was just a way that God was like telling me like, or kind of just showing me that there is another side of, you know, Christianity where there's not all this legalism and people are genuinely care about you. And so that was just because of that, that was a moment where I actually got back into church and ever since then I have been. So.
Right. Right. So the two of you kind of, I mean, you referred to like the IFB, at least to North Valley, like as being cultish or as a cult. Is that something you would, is that a label you'd apply to like the IFB as a whole, or is it something where you think specifically in that context, like the way that it operated was cultish? Because that's something that a lot of people, you know, they'll say like, oh, the movement is cultish, but some churches aren't, or some churches are cultish, but the movement's not a cult. So like, I guess where would you draw that line or make that delineation?
That's a good question. I would probably define it as a cult. There are, even if you look into a cult, there are probably a lot of good people that don't really know they mean well. Maybe they don't even know why they do the things they do, but they mean well, I guess. And so I would define it as a cult. And there are some good people. There are some really good people there. And in a way, I kind of feel sad for them. But I'm like, if only you, I don't know, you could see outside. But I would say as a whole, even though there are good people there, it's just, it's just too cultish.
Mm-hmm. And I think one of the reasons why my mom embraced it so fully and quickly, I know she had her doubts in the beginning, but then afterwards she was like all the way in, was because of that hard, because we mentioned in the beginning how growing up, my mom is extremely strict and controlling. And so the environment kind of just almost encouraged that, whereas they're like, wow, you're doing a great job with your kids. You should be even harder with them. Right. And so for her, she was like, this is like, and it's a church. So she's like, wow, I'm totally in the right here. And so when we went into that church, things were even worse, I feel like, at home, because it, like, I thought she was strict then, and now she's even like worse.
It was really.
And it was almost like she like held the pastor and youth pastor in like high esteem. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you remember this, but I remember one time, so we were homeschooled. We started homeschooling. I think Carmen was like in first grade or something. So, there was just this one day where my mom was trying to get my brother to do his homework, and he was just having a hard time. He was for whatever reason not listening. And my mom called Pastor or Brother Jones, Chris Jones, and was like, "Can you talk to my son so that he can do his homework?" And I remember thinking like, "Wow, this guy's not even our dad." But like, my mom literally pulled out her cell phone and was like, "Here, talk to my son because he's not doing his homework." And it was so odd to me then. And now that I'm saying it, it is super odd.
And it was church filling the role as like almost co-parenting essentially.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And Chris Jones was like all for it too. He was
happy.
Yeah. And so it was just,
they both like kind of fed off each other in a way, you know, cause she would call him for everything.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like more than happy to be controlling. So I kind of felt that he was like really involved in our lives, even though like he was just my youth pastor. And I was like, it's weird. And I was like, you're not.
Yeah.
But she,
I do remember that. And so, it was even, I remember so severe that my mom, we would just talk in random stuff, like in the car, in the privacy of our home. And we would mention something about Chris Jones. And my mom was like, wow, you need to go talk, you need to apologize to Pastor Jones for that. And I'm like, what? So like many a time, me and my sister, my brother, we would have to awkwardly apologize to Chris Jones about like something that he didn't even hear. And we were like, so we had to apologize. And I remember there was even times where Carmen would apologize and he would be like, okay. Or like, then my brother would apologize and he'd be like, get out of my face, you didn't mean it. And then I'd be like, I would apologize. And he'd be like, okay, you're sincere. And it was just like, we all didn't really even want to apologize. Yeah. So it was just kind of many times where we would apologize and then like someone's wouldn't be like sincere enough.
Yeah. He like all of a sudden decide that you didn't mean it. And I'm like, we basically said it the same exact way. We just, sorry. I mean, how else? I don't know. Just decide and be like, no, you can't go to the youth group today. Or we were shunned a couple times. From, mm-hmm. Like, we weren't allowed to go to the youth group for a few months. You know, we had to go with the adults.
Mm-hmm. You should mention about the you and Jonathan.
Oh, yeah. So this is kind of like way back and when. But yeah, there was an incident where I was like 12, maybe 13.
Yeah.
And this was like before cell phones. I mean, maybe I had an email, but I, you know. And so there was this guy, we would like pass notes, nothing crazy, like, you know, I was pretty naive at the time.
Super innocent.
Yeah, I was, you know, like, hey, how was your week? Well, I did this. And I would give it to him on Sunday and he would write an answer and give it to him Wednesday. I guess like he found out,
his wife
found out, told Brother Jones. And then like, I was kicked out of the youth group for like 3 months.
And me.
Christina was kicked out of the youth group for 3 months. But like the guy received like no punishment whatsoever. Right. And so I remember, like, I think I asked at one point, like, hey, why didn't so-and-so, like, and he's like, well, he was, like, sorry. And I was like, well, I said sorry. He's like, yeah, but, like, you didn't mean it or whatever. And I was just like, okay. Right.
Yeah. So I ask everybody this, like, at the end of, I mean, most shows I tend to ask this, but do you think that there's hope for a reform or change of the movement itself? Or do you think it's something where, like, it's fundamentally flawed to the point where, you know, it would have to take something completely new to replace it?
I'm going to say I don't think it can be. There's just too much. I'm actually going to say no. There's just too much that would have to change, I think. And I don't think people want it to change because I think they really like the fact that they have control, right. You know, people's lives. I don't even think we mentioned this, but my youth pastor at one point, finally, like, we got through to my mom. Mm-hmm.
I was already in college by this point.
Yeah, I was like, she finally listened to us. Like, okay, wow, maybe he is mistreating you guys. And so she did talk to my pastor, and he did remove him from the title of being a youth pastor. And he was like, you can just go to church as like a regular member. And he didn't want to. He ended up, that's why he went to Hopewell.
Yeah.
The next Sunday he was in Hopewell with his
family. And then all of a sudden he's in ministry again, in position of power. And that's the reason I don't think enough people, you know, would want to change that. I think they really like the position they have of authority and control over people.
Right.
And I see that, not even then, just this church. I mean, that happens in.
Yeah. You know, obviously happens quite a bit. Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Awesome. So I'm going to say no. Maybe she has a
different answer. I also will say no to that. I think the IFB movement has hurt way too many families and way too many individuals where there. I don't think there's reform for it at all. I've come across so many, especially because I am a GSBC alumni. I've met so many people who are just hurting just maybe didn't get the help that they needed. And they're, you know, doing things and involved in stuff that, you know, they could use to cope with it. And I've seen so many lives like destroyed, I feel, because of the IFB movement. And even for ourselves, like, I know my sister mentioned that she holds no bitterness, and I also don't hold any of it. I think it's great that you're doing this, because other people who are like teenagers or going through something in their youth group, or maybe, you know, early college, they can hear this and realize, like, I just need to get out now, instead of, you know, we waited, you know, all through, you know, graduating our senior year till we decided to actually make a move. And so I don't think there is any chance for reform.
Yeah. Well, if they're caught listening to this, they'll probably get kicked out anyway. So it'll speed up the process. Yeah. But no, I think it's what's going to take is just people talking about it and just sharing. And, you know, even in lesser situations, like, you know, just share the perspective and like just point out things that aren't normal, you know. And that's the thing, is it's not going to happen within. There's not been an acknowledgement of things not being okay. So I think just having these conversations is going to help people kind of make those decisions. And, you know, and like I said, if, you know, I always hope that there's someone sneaking the episodes, and like, I'm sure there's plenty that are, you know, binging these shows without, you know, people knowing. And I hope that's the message that goes through, is just to kind of think about it. So, but yeah, thank you so much, both of you, for coming on and for chatting about this. And it's just been really good to get to know both of you and get to talk to you through your story. So.
Definitely, definitely. And again, I speak for both of us, but we are huge advocates of your show.
Awesome.
And just, I know that I've told people about it. And my older brother, he also recently started listening to the, you know, the Preacher Boys podcast, and he's distancing himself away from his, you know, kind of taking his family away out of the IFB movement as we speak. So that's, it's already, there's been some change. And so that's just great.
Awesome. No, awesome. Well, thank you guys so much. I really appreciate it, and hope to catch up with you both really soon.
Yes. Thank you.
Awesome.
Thank you for listening to the Preacher Boys podcast. If you appreciated the content on the show, please leave a review on iTunes, and don't forget to connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter with the handle @PreacherBoysDoc. Additional information can always be found on PreacherBoysDoc.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona Tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.